Dr. Bard, for men with, and I'll read all three first and then you can answer them after. For men with prostate cancer who follow watchful waiting, how well does it work? How well does watchful waiting work? In other words, doing nothing except focusing on high quality diet and lifestyle, but not actually doing any intervention. For Dr. Funk, the question is, in your book, Breast, there's a chapter called Debunking Breast Cancer Myths. What are the myths? And for Dr. Campbell, since the China study came out, what have the follow-up studies shown? Do you feel as strong about your conclusions as you did when the book came out in the 16, 17 years since then? Do you feel less strong, the same? In other words, it was a very monumental book that talked about two different outcomes in China, yet the people were all very similar and the main difference was their diet and lifestyle. It was very dramatic. Has this been duplicated? So if each of you could answer your question, that would be great. Dr. Bard, you could start.
Sure. Well, this has been partly studied again from the World Trade Center attack in 2001, because the statistics of the first responders show that although the first three cancers are skin cancers, prostate cancer is the fifth most common cancer. And once these guys get a diagnosis of cancer, especially the firefighters with whom I work with, they're careful. They drink less alcohol, they're careful. And most of their, I'd say, with lifestyle change, watchful waiting, I'd say 90% of low-grade cancer is, it's been stable over the last 20 years since we've been working with this group. And of course, I've been doing the prostate imaging for ever since 3D ultrasound came out in 25, 30 years ago. So low-grade cancer, basically managed with lifestyle, is extremely benign disease. As a matter of fact, I caution patients that your chance of getting serious injury from a prostate biopsy is probably greater than not doing anything aggressive with the cancer. So, watch it. And the point is, we have a better way of watching it now. We do imaging with high resolution technology, which shows the location, aggression of the tumor, penetration through the capsule, spread to the glands. So if it's sitting there and you can verify that it's basically stable, I'd say we're talking 90-95% of watchful waiting will work.
Thank you. Dr. Funk?
Okay, myths. Yes, I have a whole chapter two in the book is dedicated to myths. My favorite one to debunk is when patients say, well, breast cancer doesn't run in my family, so I'm not at risk. The two biggest risk factors for getting breast cancer are being a woman and getting older. And only 5-10% of all breast cancer patients have an inherited genetic mutation like BRCA or CHEK2 that would predispose them to getting breast cancer. So that's a huge myth to debunk, because it actually can lead to a saved life by women paying more attention to their breasts if they literally think breast cancer ain't my thing, just because it's not in their family history. Importantly, 87% of women diagnosed with breast cancer do not have a single first degree relative with breast cancer, and around 80% don't have any relatives. So if you're a woman and you have breasts, you are at risk for breast cancer. Approximately 1 in 8, 12.5% of women will get breast cancer, 12.8 when you look at the details. And the risk only goes up or down from there, depending on what diet and lifestyle choices you're making. Another fun myth to debunk, because it's liberating, is coffee. So it is true that the coffee can cause breast cysts and cause breast tenderness, but neither of those things is cancer. So if coffee doesn't hurt your breast, it's actually there's mounting evidence that it's full of certain compounds, methyl xanthines and other antioxidants that actually decrease breast cancer risk. Although I've seen a number of these studies and they always are 5 cups or more a day. So it's quite a lot of coffee and that might not be good for your heart rate. Another myth is bras, underwire bras, do not have any association with breast cancer. Wearing bras has no association. Antiperspirants and deodorants. And there's good cause for concern. You know, you think about the aluminum salts in these products and the armpit being so close to the lymphatic drainage basin of the breast. And these myths, they are propagated and get some momentum because they do kind of make some sense. Like even the bra thing, like the wire in the bra may have some toxic effects, or maybe it's, if it's too tight, you create lymphatic congestion, and lymph, of course, contains the toxins that's supposed to travel out, and maybe they leak into the breast, but it actually just doesn't follow through with the science when you really do the research on them. So that's another one. Hair relaxers in African American women do not have an association with breast cancer. Acidic foods. So this is of interest to me. Alkaline water is kind of all the rage, but you have to realize that this kind of goes against basic physiology. First of all, whatever you swallow down goes into a complete acid bath of a pH 1.5 to 3.5. So that gets altered. And your body tightly regulates your pH by making you pee out the imbalance, like between 6.8 and 7.8. And outside of that, you're dead. So this whole idea of like drinking alkaline is rooted in something smart. So again, like all these myths are perpetuated because of like an initial thing, like, that makes sense. It is true that cancer flourishes in a more acidic and hypoxic environment. However, it creates its own little environment, that tumor microenvironment. It makes its own acid right there where it's spinning in place. So drinking the alkaline stuff never actually makes it there to neutralize that situation. And just as a general truth, plant-based foods are alkaline, whereas the meat and dairy products are more acidic. So if you are eating alkaline, you are eating a healthy diet, that actually the diet itself and all of the phytonutrients in those foods are decreasing your risk of cancer, not actually the alkaline state of said foods. Piercings and tattoos, body art has no association with cancer. I will say that tattoos on your chest, like whenever I do a sentinel node biopsy and I'm operating, I can literally see, like, it dyes the node. So it does get in your body. It's seen microscopically by the pathologist all the time. Medical x-rays do have an association with breast cancer, but the like electromagnetic fields that you naturally are exposed to as you walk around, or a cell phone or microwave, all of these ionizing radiation sources do not cause breast cancer. And finally, I'll go with abortions. They do not have any association with breast cancer. There are some more fun ones, so I encourage you to get my book and read all about them.
Thank you.
So it's a difficult question. You know, I think to repeat your question, Steve, please jump in, is, you know, how has my view or my understanding changed since writing the China study, basically? And the China study, of course, the first third of that book is really my dad's research, his research career and his research journey. And I helped him write it and think about it and present it and organize it and that type of thing. But living the research, doing the research and writing about it are two different things. So I would be remiss to say, you know, that was my experience, right, from that book. But I think when I talk to people about the China study, one of the things that that comes up sometimes is that people have, maybe an overly simplistic understanding of the book. And that is that, you know, animal protein causes cancer. And it's proven, and, you know, my dad had an extensive animal laboratory and research and looked at it in great detail. And I think when you look at the totality of evidence, I think what we were saying more evidence, more weight was that diets with high levels of animal protein, dietary patterns with high levels of animal protein, and also with more processed food is unhealthy. So, you know, I think if you, it would be great to talk about this with my dad at the same time, but You know, I think he would agree with that. And we've talked about this many times, that it's not as simple as saying, you know, that study showed animal protein causes all cancer. So moving on from that basic understanding, you know, clearing up that sort of initial understanding, was that plant predominant diets potentially can have a dramatic effect on cancer, and in animal research, even affect progression of cancer. You know, I don't think from there, over the next, however long it's been, 16, 17 years since the book's come out, I don't think my view has changed. I mean, I think the research has supported that by and large, and that, you know, more plant predominant diets, more whole food diets, if there's an effect of nutrition, it's often positive. You know, what strikes me is the lack of research, really. I mean, as I went from working with my dad in nutrition and communicating about nutrition, then to filling in the medical background and then getting into research myself, it's astonishing to me how many years, decades, centuries even, that, you know, the idea of looking at dietary treatment of cancer has been brought up as a prospect, and how little has been done. So, you know, since the China study has been done, Dean Ornish did a randomized controlled trial in early stage prostate cancer. You know, but there's been precious few in supporting this idea of a plant-based diets actually potentially affecting progression and being a treatment, one treatment approach. And, you know, other than that, unfortunately, there haven't been too many intervention studies. So, you know, we're working on it, but that's kind of really what we need.